Well, as these summer months have waxed on, maybe some of you have had the great opportunity to go camping as a family. And I remember one of the times when I was a young child where my dad got the courage to bring his young son with him to the Boundary Waters. Now, for me, this was the first time that I was kind of brought outside of a first world setting of where I had water and a bed and shower and food anytime that I needed it. And so it took a week to get ready and to pack. And I remember seeing my dad laying out all of the stuff to go up to the Boundary Waters to make sure that we had everything we needed in this place that had no amenities. Now, I learned at that moment that when you go into a place where you don't know what to expect, you have to prepare for the unexpected. This is where it baffles me that Jesus in the gospel, sending his disciples all over to the four corners of the world, he says, okay, guys, I'm going to get you ready. And here's what you're not going to bring. Anything. He goes, you can have this. You can have a stick, you can have sandals, and a friend. And it's like, okay, Jesus, have you ever traveled before? Like, you're going to need a little bit more than that. So what we can gather from this is the Lord was not just simply literally telling them, here's the only supplies you could bring on a journey. But actually, there's a deep symbolism that's present in our gospel today. And I want to break apart the three images that we give and how it actually applies to our life. So the first is the stick or the staff. Now, throughout the scriptures, especially in the Old Testament, the staff is always seen as something of power, something that you lean on. And anyone who's gone on a hiking trip knows it's fun to just grab a stick and to use it as a staff because it takes some of the weight off. Now, we see Moses, right, as he's working the miracles and he's bringing about the prophecy in Egypt. He's using this staff to allow God to do powerful signs and wonders. Lifts it up and the Red Sea parts in two. We also have the staff of Aaron that blooms and blossoms to show and to reveal to us the fruitfulness of the priesthood. Now, the staff is to represent for us in the gospel God's presence with us. God is to be for us that walking staff that we always lean on in the most difficult things when we're most exhausted and someone that's our steady companion. Now for the sandals. Now the sandals are interesting because most of us have all been created with feet, right? And we walk where we want to go, we do what we want to do. And so what sandals are to represent symbolically is that we're putting on our feet the ability to be led by someone other than ourselves. Literally being open to a path set in front of us that may not be of our choosing, but is of God's. And indeed, as God sends out his disciples, he says, you're going to go where you don't necessarily want to go, but I will be there walking with you. So there's the staff, there's the sandals, and now the companion. Now the companion is the most beautiful thing because God, who is a trinity of persons, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, he told us that he created us in his image and likeness. So what that means for us is that we are meant for community. We don't function well without other people. In fact, when folks are totally isolated, weird things begin to happen in their mind and in their lives. God sends us out two by two to keep us in check, but also to realize that we learn a lot from other people. And no doubt as you look back in your own life, there's people you learned what not to do, and you learned from people what you should do. Now, all of this being gathered up, I wish to share with you today a little bit of my own personal testimony. My own journey of where I have been accompanied by the staff, the sandals, and another companion. Now, my vocational journey actually began just right down a couple miles in Loretto. I was baptized at the Church of St. Peter in St. Paul. And when I was born very close to the Easter Vigil. And there was no one that the priest was going to welcome into the church at the vigil, so we asked my mom, can I baptize your baby on the vigil? And my mom's like, sure, no problem. Had no idea it was a three-hour mass, okay? It's like one of those surprise moments. So sure enough, the day of the baptism happens, it's the Easter vigil, all the beautiful liturgies going on, they bring me over to the font, and my grandma, Delzetta Thomas, who when she lived here in Delano was Delzetta Kaiser, she leans over to my mom at the baptism and she says, you know what it means when a baby's baptized on the Easter Vigil. My mom's like, no, it means he's going to be a priest. Now, I have never heard that before, ever. And I think my grandma was just either inspired by the Spirit or was just somewhere else at the three-hour liturgy. My mom did not share this with me until after my ordination. But the first person that saw my vocation was my grandmother. And it's so beautiful because as I journeyed through the seminary and my growing up years, my grandma remained as this brilliant light for me of the beauty found in Christianity. Now, as I then began to grow up, we lived in Lakeville, Minnesota, down south. And at about 6 years old, my parents split up. Now, if you come from a divorced house or you are part of a divorced house now, you know that it's a very difficult thing. Because what you have is two separate families now growing together, and you try to just keep as many of the pieces in play as you possibly can. And so my brother and I, we would literally stay at my mom's house for 1 week in Lakeville, and then we would go to my dad's house for 1 week in Prior Lake. So it was a lot of movement from one house to the other, and in that movement, things get dropped. And so my parents just, they didn't have the time to be able to bring us to church. And so as my brother and I were growing up, we did the major sacramental years, we did the second grade first communion, we did our confirmation, but outside of that, there wasn't much faith enrichment. But my grandma, again, remained this brilliant light that every time we went out to her house in Loretto, she would bring my brother and I to Mass. Now, my brother and I were hellions in church. We were about the worst behaved kids. You kids are great compared to us, all right? As I found a trick when I was young, as if my parents ever tried to bring me to church and I could make my brother cry, they would leave. And so me, being this wise little kid, believed that every time I made my brother cry, it meant that we got out of a little bit of church. And my parents were bribing me with just about everything, all right? You want money, you want candy, you want breakfast, you want video games, just behave. And no, I'd pinch my brother and I'd tease him and they'd cry and my parents just stopped trying. But when we went to Grandma's house, Grandma had the look and the pinch, all right? And so when she invoked those things, silence became over my brother and I. And so my grandmother revealed to us about the importance of religion, and she didn't give up on us. And so as the years continued to pass, there was this hole that was kind of searching for something more. Now, I am a millennial through and through, and so I grew up with the internet. And so for our generation, whenever we have questions for things, we don't ask people, we ask Google. And so I began to Google all of these different religions throughout the world, all these different spiritualities, because I knew there was something, but I didn't know exactly what it was. And, you know, you can't trust adults, so I got to find it myself as a child. And so as I'm Googling all these different things and researching Hinduism and Buddhism and Native American religions and witchcraft and the occult and paranormal experiences and psychics, I'm discovering that there is this kind of weird spiritual thing that's going on all around us, and people are getting tapped into it all over the world in different ways. And so at that time, a neighborhood kid and I, he was a devout atheist. I was kind of drifting. And him and I would hang out all the time, and we'd talk about these things. We'd watch those UFO specials on the History Channel, and we couldn't wait to all the mummies that were uncovered and Dracula that was, I'm sure, real. And we were just fascinated by the unknown realities that surrounded us. Now, as I continued to grow and discover my own thing, that internal seeking began to result in some confusion within me. And I began to question who I was and what was going on in life, and it got dark. And so myself, unknowing to what I was doing, began to allow that darkness to drift out from me. So now I was one of those kids in high school who was the weird kid, who wore my trench coat to school every day, who had huge spiked red, orange, black, and blue hair. And kids out there, just so you know, if you want your hair to fall out, start dyeing it colors, okay? Manic panic does not work, okay? Hot Topic is not where you buy hair dye, all right? See how beautiful could have been, all right? Look what I've done to myself. And so I was dressing on the outside how I felt in the inside, confused. Like a misfit that didn't fit in. And as I was researching all these different spiritualities, I was trying to find a place to belong, but nothing was fitting. Now, at this time, there was a girl in my high school that I really liked. And she told me that she was going to go to her youth group, and I'm like, okay, I'll go with you if I can just hang out with you. Like, this is awesome. You like a weird kid like me? I'm totally with you. And so we went to this youth group, and at that youth group, the pastor gave a sermon about how Catholicism was this horrible thing. It destroyed Christianity. It's awful. It's wicked. Catholicism you have to stay far from, and you have to return back to normal Christianity. And I remember walking away from that thinking, okay, so there's two conclusions I can make. Either one, my grandmother, who is the most amazing human being I've ever met, is really duplicitous and wicked on the inside. Or my grandma's legit, and this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. So I decided to do what I always did when I had questions. I Googled Catholicism, and I began to research it. And I began to find it so fascinating because there was within Catholicism all these weird mystical experiences. And my buddy and I, who this like, profound atheist, were researching this, and we find in Bosnia-Herzegovina, to this day, there's some woman appearing to people in visions. And this place is called Medjugorje. And so my buddy and I are researching things, and we're like, oh man, dude, this woman appeared and said, if on Wednesdays and Fridays you fast on only bread and water alone, something powerful will happen. So my buddy and I, my senior year of high school, I'm not even going to church on a regular basis. My buddy's an atheist, and we're like, we're going to fast on bread and water every Wednesday and Friday of our senior year. See, I was a weird kid, all right, on multiple levels. And we did this our whole senior year. We would literally call Domino's and say, can you deliver a pizza at midnight on Friday, all right? And so I'm a firm believer that Mary led me to that. Because there's a passage in the scriptures that says, only through prayer and fasting can some demons be expelled. And I believed after researching all of that weird stuff and bringing it inside of me, it was through that fasting that I began to be purged of it. At that same time, I met another person in my school who was just as weird as I was. He wore the trench coat, he had dyed hair, he was eccentric, but he was a devout Catholic. Again, seeing the strange companionship that accompanies at each phase in our journey. And sure enough, my friend began to introduce me into strange things like the Swiss Guard. Who knew that the Pope had a military that was trained in multiple martial arts? I mean, these guys are hardcore since the 1500s. I'm like, this religion's awesome. And so I decided, you know what? I want to start going into this. So I went to Mass every so often, and I'm like, I want to grow in this. So I applied to the University of St. Thomas saying, I want to go to a Catholic university. I want to go for psychology. I love the human mind. It's fascinating. And so I called up to the priest that was the chaplain up there, and I said, hey, can I come and talk to you? How am I supposed to live my faith at the college? And he said, yeah, Nate, why don't you come up? Come to a Sunday Mass, and we'll go for breakfast afterwards. And sure enough, I showed up with my trench coat and my spiked red hair. And this is the dangers of a phone call, is you don't know what you're going to get when you order it. And so no doubt, Father Jeff was looking over the congregation and saying during Mass, please not him, please not him. And sure enough, after Mass, I went up to him. He brought me out to breakfast. And at the end of breakfast, I don't know what inspired this man. But he said, have you ever thought about seminary, Nate? And I go, I don't know, what is a seminary? And he said, well, it's a place where people go to be formed to be priests. Now keep in mind, I was delving deep into the occult and witchcraft and weird spirituality. So my next question to him was, well, what powers do they get? To which Father Jeff goes, well, they don't really get powers, but let me show you the seminary, which was basically code word for, I'm going to get you out of here and dump you on someone else, okay? So Father Jeff showed me the seminary. I went, I did a come and see weekend, and it was weird. As these guys were going to Mass, not just on Sundays, every day. They were starting their day at 6 a.m. with the holy hour. Their conversations were about the lives of the saints and the coolness of Catholicism. And I'm like, okay, I like Catholic stuff, but this is too much. And so I'm like, okay, I'll just go to St. Thomas, live in Ireland Hall, and I'll do my psychology thing. But as my senior year progressed and that prayer and fasting continued, I began to fall more and more in love with Catholicism. And that seed that was planted by Father Jeff Heward began to blossom and grow. And so I decided to make an appointment with the vocation director, Father Tom Wilson, at the time. And I remember meeting with Father Wilson again in my lovely trench coat and now spiked red hair, or I'm sorry, spiked black hair. And as I met with Father Tom Wilson, I had one reference, Father Jeff Heward. And I remember in that meeting, he says, so Nate, tell me about your prayer life. And I say, well, sometimes I pray before meals, sometime before bed, and I go to Mass about once a month. And he's like, and do you want that to grow? I'm like, no, actually, I really like my prayer life. Thanks for asking. And so we ended the meeting, and I only found out after my ordination that he had then called Father Jeff Heward. He said, this is an awful candidate for the priesthood. He goes, this kid is completely immature. He has no prayer life, no connectedness. He said, just let him go live in the world a little bit and then come back if the calling remains. And Father Jeff Heward, to his credit, said, Tom, let him in and I'll watch after him. And for some reason, Father Tom Wilson listened to him and I was admitted into the seminary. And Father Jeff Heward was my spiritual director all the way through, and he walked with me. And I'll never forget our first spiritual direction where I'm out of my mind with anxiety. And I said, Father Jeff, I don't know if I'm called to be a priest or not. I don't know if I should be here. And he looked at me at my eyes in all sincerity and says, Nate, let's just decide if you want to be Christian and then go from there. But over those 8 years, he discipled me. He taught me the beauties of the faith. And this is where I want to connect to the beginning of the homily that I was giving about the staff, the sandals, and the companion along the way. As unbeknownst to me, God was always my rock and refuge, and as things began to tear apart within our family and drift apart, it was God who was walking side by side with me. He was who I relied on, who I leaned on, even when I didn't know I was doing it. The sandals on my feet, of course, my path went all over the place. I had no idea what direction. But I was always open to asking God, what should I do with my life and what is your plan? This indeed, my brothers and sisters, is what we are all called to do. To say, I didn't create me, I didn't make me, I didn't choose me. And so I don't know the best path to take. So God, guide me along my way. And then the companion along the way. As I look back, the right people came at the right time. My brothers and sisters, no one gets to heaven alone. No one. God places people in our path for better, for worse, but we are to learn from them. And in this beautiful community that is so rich with faith, there is so many of us journeying along with one another. And I already know in my short 4 years of being here in Delano, so many of you have personally planted seeds in my life and helped me on my own discipleship. Indeed, as we hear our Lord's great commission of sending his disciples out, let us be reminded of what that staff is, that relationship with God, those sandals, to be willing to follow a path that is not our own, and that we are never alone on our journey to heaven.